from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, are the green shoots that Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke says are coming up economically really within our present sights, as a nation, as well as here in California? There are strong indicators that the recession may indeed be starting its descent, but the job market is still weak, and the question of where mass numbers of jobs are going to come from remains, as do questions about the fact that corporate profits and retail sales are also down. But home sales and the market are up, and economists of many different stripes are saying things overall are looking up. In the hour ahead, we take stock of the economy and survey what is up and what is down as we try to get a fix on how things look nationally and here in California. Down the road, we'll be joined by a panel and take your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. The headline on the cover of this week's Newsweek magazine proclaims enthusiastically that the nation's recession is over, followed by the plaintive words, now what? Over the past 3 months, home sales have gone up and the nation's stock market has rallied some 44% since March. Moreover, in June, 7 of the 10 economic indicators in the Conference Board Leading Economic Index pointed upward, including manufacturing hours and unemployment claims. Macroeconomists say the nation's economy is expanding in the current quarter at a rate of annually 2.5%, and Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke told Congress that economic activity will increase slightly over the remainder of 2009. All such positive news needs to be weighed against the ongoing high rate of unemployment, over 10% nationally and creeping toward 12% here in California, and a weak and low hiring job market. Corporate profits and retail sales also are down. In this hour of Forum, we want to turn our attention to the economy. And let me tell you who is joining the program. Stephen Levy is director of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy. He joins us from Palo Alto. Good morning, Steve Levy.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have David Henderson, who is a research fellow with the Hoover Institution at Stanford and editor of the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics. He joins us this morning from Monterey. Good morning, David Henderson.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, and we'll say hi and good morning also to Robin Farzad, who is senior writer with Business Week magazine and joins us from Rockefeller Center in New York City. Welcome.
How goes it?
It goes. How does the economy go is really the question I'll begin with you. Recession over?
You know, everybody's been looking for any tentative, hesitating signs of some sort of recovery after the sheer hell we've gone through for the past 9 months, especially the sharp drop off after the October and September meltdowns. So the fact that things didn't become so unglued so rapidly, I think, has been fodder for some guarded optimism. But when you look at the stock market, it's just been on fire since March. So it's not exactly being guarded about things. In the end, I revert back to that unemployment number. It's the headline concern for me, the fact that we're about to pierce double digits, and you would have to have monster gains in job creation for us to begin to cut into that number. And I think that subsumes everything else.
Yeah, 500,000 jobs lost just last month. And one has to ask where the jobs are going to come from. I guess the Obama administration is saying going to be a lot of green jobs.
Yes, but hopefully these green jobs can be self-sustaining. The Obama administration is shoveling just tons upon tons of money at the problem. You're hearing about infrastructure, green jobs, New Deal-like overtones and undertones, but they can't spend ad infinitum. Some of this stuff has to take hold and encourage private investment, and that remains to be seen very much so if this is ultimately going to be piggybacked by venture capitalists and people who are eager to untie some of their purse strings.
Could we say that this possibly could be the peak of unemployment? Because certainly a lot of offshoring has resulted in job loss, and the internet has had its effect in the economy. But if green sprouts are coming up, like Ben Bernanke says, then maybe unemployment will suddenly be raised as well. I mean, will suddenly be affected as well.
Well, the numbers are still big. The numbers we're getting over monthly job losses, even if they're abating somewhat, they're still rather massive. And to effectively skyrocket from a 6% unemployment rate to a 10% rate, something that we didn't see since, I think, Ronald Reagan, Morning in America, is rather stunning. Go back to Econ 101, I think the natural rate is somewhere closer to 4 to 5%. So this is, at least in recent memory, uncharted territory.
Well, and I mentioned Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, David Henderson, and he also seemed to intimate that this current crisis could have been far worse if it hadn't been for bailouts. In fact, he even said maybe we would have done worse than we did in the Great Depression. And yet there seems to be a general consensus that these bailouts are costing us so much money that they're also affecting the economy. How do you see it?
I think he's wrong on that. I think, Bernanke had a very different interpretation of the Great Depression than Milton Friedman. That kind of didn't get noticed until the last few months, but it's right there in all his research. He saw the Great Depression. See, Milton Friedman said the Great Depression was caused in large part by about a 30% decline in the money supply. Bernanke said it was caused on the supply side of financial institutions, that there was financial disintermediation and the financial system froze, and that's why he was so panicked back in September, and that's why he went for all these things that Fed chairs don't traditionally do, like all these bailouts. I think these bailouts and the Chrysler bailout with the way the bondholders got treated, with United Auto Workers being given a senior place even though they didn't have senior bonds, I think that was a tremendously bad signal for the market. I think economies tend to bounce back. There's a natural bounce back. Think of a violin string on the violin, and when you pluck it, it's going to go back. So I'm confident we'll get out of this, but I think it'll be anemic compared to the way it would have been if property rights hadn't been so under assault from Paulson, Bush, and Obama.
Well, if the recession indeed is over, shouldn't the job market also improve? Isn't that a natural corollary? Well, you're suggesting that maybe things will get better anemically, but nonetheless better.
Right. Oh, yeah, it'll get better. I mean, when people say, oh, we're going to be stuck this way for 4 years or for 8 years, I think that's nonsense. It'll come back. No one's really good at predicting when. And by the way, I noticed you said in the introduction that the unemployment rate is 10%. Well, maybe, but we don't know that yet. We won't know that till the first Friday in August, and it might be, but it might not be.
Well, that's a good indication of the general uncertainty about health insurance, uncertainty about cap and trade, as you suggest, perhaps even property rights and bailouts. That's affecting the economy big time, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And by the way, one thing that's not going to help, that's going to hurt, is they wouldn't delay the minimum wage increase, which will price out of the labor market a lot of unskilled people, particularly youth. So that came into effect last Friday. That's going to hurt.
Well, in fact, as Kevin was just saying in my ear, the market hates uncertainty. And I'm just looking at something right off the wires that said that stocks are slumping because of the retreat as investors consider Yahoo, Microsoft working together. Weaker durable good orders. We suddenly see a slump in the market there. I mean, I think that has to be.
It's always hard, though, Michael, to say, okay, this is why stocks fell. You can look at Microsoft and Yahoo stock and have some confidence, but GM stock because of Microsoft Yahoo, I don't know.
One thing I need to cover with you, David Henderson, is the idea of extended benefits, which I know you don't see as being good. We spoke with Professor Allegretto, Sylvia Allegretto, UC Berkeley. And she said that it's a great stimulus. We need these extensions. We need essentially these benefits because almost half the job losses have been in construction and manufacturing.
Right. What she's doing is looking at the demand side. She's saying if you give extended unemployment benefits to unemployed workers, they'll spend them. And she's right. What I'm doing is I'm looking at the supply side. When you give people an incentive to search a little longer for a job, they can be pickier about a job. And the best estimate I came up with based on some past research by some economists who looked at unemployment insurance is that the extension of benefits that Bush started and then Obama continued probably accounts for 3/10 or 4/10 of a percentage point of unemployment. So without them, we'd have 3/10 or 4/10 percentage point lower. So instead of being 9.5, now it'd be 9.1 or 9.2. Now, on the demand side, you can get those same things by just a tax cut and also ideally a cut in marginal tax rates so people's incentives aren't hurt. The Obama stimulus plan that passed back in February had no cuts, literally no cuts in marginal tax rates, and implicitly an increase in marginal tax rates for a certain group of people.
David Henderson is a research fellow with Hoover Institution at Stanford, editor of the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics, with us from Monterey. And with us from Palo Alto, Stephen Levy, who is an economist and director of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy. Steve, how do you assess, let's first talk about unemployment, job loss, and unemployment benefits, and whether the stimulus is having any effect?
I think the first thing listeners know is that both California and the nation are still in recession, as the Business Week reporter said. We have continuing job losses and continuing increases in unemployment, and all economists agree that the last part of the economy to recover is unemployment, because it takes a certain level of job growth to be able to reduce unemployment. On the other hand, as you said at the beginning, we are seeing the beginning of the end of the recession. Unfortunately, the first part of the end of the recession is that we'll have some GDP, gross domestic product numbers, that show that we're producing more this quarter than we did last quarter. We can do that for a while in the nation in California without adding jobs. So we need several months of growing production before it translates into job growth. There's some very positive signs. We're seeing leveling off in housing prices and an increase in housing sales. And right around the Bay Area, we're beginning to see multiple offers at these very low foreclosure prices. We know that the next federal agenda has innovation at the top, so there's going to be money for innovation in medical records technology or alternative energy or transmission lines, wide uses of technology. And as the Business Week reporter said, that eventually has to bring forth private capital, but we're sitting in a place that gets half of the nation's venture capital investment. So we're well-placed. It's just that it's slow. The stimulus money is slow to get out. We put out less than a quarter of it. That's the bad news. The good news is that there's still three-quarters of it left to come out over the next 18 months, so we should see the stimulus helping. I disagree a little bit with Dave Henderson. I think what this recession is a shortage of customers, and there's no tax incentive you can give to people. They've been saving that money. That was the Bush tax cut experience. Businesses aren't going to step up to invest until they see an increase in demand from customers. What the federal government's trying to do with the safety net programs and the tax cuts and the infrastructure money is be a customer until the economy can get back on its feet and the private sector can get going. Maybe early next year, so getting to the end of the recession, but no one should think that we're not still in recession. There'll be 200,000 more jobs lost probably in California before it turns around.
We get back to uncertainty again, don't we? These businesses, many of them are just biding their time. They're afraid, really, to move forward.
Right. I mean, I think uncertainty is for homeowners and consumers and businesses. We're in a situation that we've never seen. We've had deep recessions, but a deep recession combined with a huge shock in the housing market and great uncertainty in the financial markets is something none of us have seen in our lifetime, and it is very uncertain. I think people will need to see several months of stability and upturn before they loosen their wallets.
Well, the last two recessions were only 8 months long. They both had jobless recoveries.
Right. That is the fear, that the private economy is weak, that our foreign trading partners are also in recession when we are, that there's signs that we're getting to a bottom. There are fewer signs that there's anything out there to accelerate a move upward. But it can turn in a hurry. I mean, the stock market has turned in a hurry. And the housing market, if we can get the loan modification program to work and reduce the inventory of foreclosed homes, it can turn.
But that's been very slow. This loan modification program, not only slow, but riddled with fraud, unfortunately. We did a whole program on that. We're talking, by the way, with Steve Levy, who is director of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy. I just want to ask you about China and how that plays into all this, because their economy seems to be doing quite well, and we're certainly buying and shipping a lot to them. Not necessarily buying safe goods, we might add, but buying nonetheless.
Well, there are two giant positives for next year and beyond. One is that we are the center of Pacific Rim trade and investment, and it's the Chinese becoming a bigger and bigger market for us over time and shipping more goods back into the ports here. That's a huge positive. They can really help bring Asia and the United States back a little. And the second huge positive is this focus on innovation and technology and the opportunities that that will bring for private venture capital and private innovation here in the Bay Area. So China's very important, and the new emphasis on technology and innovation is important. It's just not going to bring jobs by the holiday.
Let me go back to Robin Farzad, who's with us in New York, senior writer with Business Week magazine. And Robin Farzad, it's generally true, though. We've been talking a lot about unemployment, and unemployment and retail sales historically are not all that revelatory about the directional changes of the economy, are they?
There's debate about that right now. A lot of people reflexively say that unemployment is a lagging indicator, but so many things are happening. I think with your other guest talking about the sheer peculiarity of this recession, in that lots of things are happening concurrently that are keeping people kind of structurally unemployed, all amidst the bigger picture this decade of mass offshoring, a lot of jobs moving to the service sector. Detroit getting gutted. So ultimately, this really comes down to me. The unemployment story is kind of wound up in the story of we don't have a theme. We don't have something to hang our hats on, whether it was the internet in the 1990s or, a call to build cars the way Detroit did in the 1950s or people coming back. There was a credit bubble that gave people ephemeral fleeting gains in this decade. So there's nothing really that's going on. You are getting some sort of sugar rush from the government that is backstopping some sort of demand by spending hundreds of billions of dollars and exacerbating the deficit. But there isn't a secular story. There isn't a, how should I put it, kind of a something that gets the animal spirits flowing, that gets people both working and imagining and saying there's something to strive toward in this case. There isn't a war. There isn't a
we got two wars going on.
technology. Yeah, but I mean that's old news already, and we're significantly in the hawk for them. So, stepping away from quantitative measures, I think qualitatively we really don't have a self-sustaining story. Is there, something a penicillin type or a Manhattan Project type thing that can rally people and bring back 5 million jobs. And
something like the long-term manufacturing that made this country so healthy economically. Huh?
That's right.
Again, Robin Farzad is a senior writer with Business Week magazine. David Henderson, you see anything on the horizon along the lines of what he's talking about here? I mean, a penicillin or sugar rush, to use his metaphors, or something?
Well, my hope, and I don't think they'll necessarily do this, but my hope would be for monetary policy, and this kind of relates to something Stephen said, that it is true, he's right, that we've got a spending problem. We've got a loss in aggregate demand. The problem with fiscal policy, the problem especially on the spending side, is when government spends money, we have no assurance it's spending it on things that are valuable. When government spends money, it's spending our money, and no one spends someone else's money as carefully as they spend their own. It's not even close. So we got a lot of waste. We have a kind of a GDP fetishism that says, hey, the GDP number is up and we don't care whether it's just crummy stuff that's being bought. Whereas if you went with a very aggressive monetary policy, which an economist named Scott Sumner has been pushing, he's now on the web called a one-trick pony, but it's a heck of a trick. And the idea is to pump up the money supply, get that going, and then at least the money that people are spending, the increase in aggregate demand that Stephen wants, is due to people spending their own money. And so you get a much more valuable increase in GDP.
But does that not bring with it a welter of unintended consequences, though? People recklessly spending that money because it's flooding the plane. It's omnipresent. They do reckless things with it. There is very little opportunity cost in taking it out of a low-yielding savings account and just applying it to some sort of pyrotechnics or some daredevil stunt like mortgage alchemy.
Isn't that the
slippery slope?
No, I don't think so. If I had more money, I'm going to spend it on things I value. So I know that the value of something I buy for a dollar, the value to me is at least a dollar. If the government spends money, we don't know that it even has positive value. For example, let's say they spent money to step up the drug war. The drug war causes destruction. And so we would have government spending money on employees to cause more destruction. And so, no, I mean...
Yeah, but David Henderson, you said that we should have loosened the money policy and printed more money. If you have too much money, you create more inflation, don't you?
Right.
You send the capital abroad and you force the economy to contract.
Right, and then you ratchet it back. But the point is, when we've got nominal GDP falling, in other words, the price level times the real output falling, that means we aren't printing enough money. And so, you know, it does require a little care on the part of the Fed, and I'd rather not have a Fed, but we've got one. And so if we've got one, I want it to do things that aren't going to keep this recovery from happening.
Steve Levy, you want to weigh in here?
Sure. I think Dave and Robin and I agree that in a deep recession, there's a role for federal intervention. I think Dave and I might, over coffee, disagree on the appropriate mix of intervention tools. But I think in the short term, this recession will end partly because recessions end and partly because, whether it's monetary policy or the stimulus, the fiscal policy, the federal government is stepping in the short term. To go to your question of whether there's a goodie on the horizon, I think we would all also probably agree that there are wonderful projects out there in rebuilding the infrastructure of this country, in bringing technology to bear on a wide variety of problems. There's probably a role for federal seed money, but in the end, I think Dave and I would agree that those projects only go forward if they have a rate of return to society, if private companies want to step up and put their money in. I think maybe not in the next year and maybe not green, but if you think of technology broadly applied rather than just green, we really need to jumpstart this economy and our thinking and get back and be competitive in designing products and services that can be made here. And I think we can do that. The stimulus package has a little bit of a start, but it does have to be picked up by the private sector and sensible projects.
Private sector, which is seeing profits down, of course.
Well, but, I mean, the private sector will rally to try and produce a more efficient battery, better medical records technology equipment, just like they produce the most efficient financial transactions sector in the world. So there's a lot of stuff out there we need to be doing, and I think I would have had more infrastructure investment. I would be building assets, physical assets for the future that reduce cost and provide a stream of benefits. That would have been my change in the mix.
Well, we're coming up on a break, and I want to give our phone number to listeners because I want to afford listeners the opportunity to join this conversation. How do you feel the economy is headed, and what are your concerns, your anxieties, as well as your hopes? You can join us toll-free, whether you're listening on radio, Internet, or Sirius XM satellite. We welcome your involvement in the program. It's 866-733-6786. Again, your calls. Toll-free number 866-733-6786 or send an email to forum@kqed.org. Talking with Stephen Levy, who directs the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy. David Henderson, a research fellow with the Hoover Institution at Stanford and editor of the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics. And Robin Farzad, who is senior editor with Business Week. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the economy, and recent economic data indicates that the economy may be slowly finding its way out of recession. However, the job market continues to be weak. We're talking about job loss of really 400,000 to 500,000 a month. And we're looking with a panel at, well, the recession, signs of recovery, and questions related to job market and employment. With us from New York, Robin Farzad, who is senior writer for Business Week magazine, and David Henderson is with us from Monterey. He's a research fellow with the Hoover Institution at Stanford, and Stephen Levy, director of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy, is with us from Palo Alto. I want to go right to your calls and emails. A quick question, though, David Henderson, just in terms of maybe, well, personnel, and that is, excuse me, let me actually ask Robin Farzad this question. David Henderson had indicated to us off the air that he thought maybe it would be in the best interest of the economy if Tim Geithner were removed from his job as Secretary of the Treasury. I wondered where you would come down on that, Robin Farzad.
Oh, gosh. It's fascinating how binary things are. I've never, you know, in my years of reporting the economy and the market, seen people as polarized as they are, kind of scrap the entire system, the almost the Nouriel Roubini school, that it's just all entirely broken, and the others that realize that it's so touch and go. And for better or for worse, we have a Fed and Ben Bernanke that has never been so concentrated in terms of its power, and working in tandem with Tim Geithner, and therefore it would be in nobody's interest to shuffle the bench in the middle of all of this consternation and these moving parts. So, you know, I can't make an opinion on that. I think it's very much a work in progress. You've seen trillions injected into the system in the past year and a half, and bureaucrats and politicians and economists are just crossing their fingers and hoping for some of this stuff to stick. Rates are at such a low that the Fed would be pushing on a string to kind of go back and talk about cutting interest rates again. So it's tried to implement other policy levers. And, you know, we just don't know at this point. We haven't ever seen anything like this. Bubbles come and bubbles go, but everything was so wound up in a consumer spending credit, real estate bubble, just this one ginormous bubble that we've thrown every type of policy remedy at it, and we're in more of a wait-and-see approach right now. So I would be loath to say that you know, halfway through we should scrap the Treasury Secretary just maybe a few months into his tenure and try something else. We're trying everything.
David Henderson, want to go on record here before I go to our callers?
Sure. And just to point out, I said we should fire Geithner. Of course, it does depend on who would be appointed to replace him. We could do worse.
My grandfather used to say, this czar is bad enough, we don't need a new one.
But I did say also off the air that in my conversation yesterday that I think that Bush's best thing he could have done was fire Paulson. I think Paulson is really the bad egg in this, and it was just a huge bad signal to markets that he was going to give this guy $700 billion to do what he wanted with.
No, but honestly, what would you have done going back to the horror of the, you know, those 2-3 weeks in September and October where we didn't know what we were dealing with? It was like, you know, Godzilla was marching down Wall Street in Midtown Manhattan, and you can vilify Paulson as much as you want, but if you go back and say that did he with good faith try to cordon off the problem and go to the president and say, look, the entire system is about to just collapse on its own self. I don't think that it's fair to say that, you know, it's kind of nefarious or he was a bad egg what he was doing. And there's been a lot of revisionism.
Robert, you asked me a question, right?
Right.
Do I get the answer?
By all means.
Okay. I don't know enough about him to know he didn't act in bad faith. I don't know you do either. His kids had $100 million. His adult children in Goldman Sachs stock, which has come out hugely positive from this. And as I said earlier, what I would have done is a more aggressive monetary policy. If you say we don't know what's happening, I think you're right. We didn't know, and he didn't know either. When people don't know things, you don't give them $700 billion of our money and a huge amount of discretion.
Well, as long as we're talking about politicians, I want to hear from Stephen Levy on our governor. Would we be doing better economically in this state, in your opinion, as many seem to feel, if Arnold Schwarzenegger were not at the helm? Or someone else, I suppose. It depends on who that someone else is.
Okay.
Maybe Gray Davis?
Uncharacteristically, I'm not going to answer that question. On the previous question, I agree with Robin. If you want me to talk about the governor, I think what listeners probably know, if they've been following this, is that the budget agreement is a very, very temporary fix that Californians have not faced up to the long-term gap between the revenue that comes in every year and the amount that we want to spend. We'll be back in the soup in January if we get that far. Californians, I think, as Robin was saying about the nation, are very binary or polarized or gridlocked, and the budget agreement didn't resolve any of these basic issues. It did, despite what the governor said, somewhat kick the can down the road for a while. There's going to be lots of stuff that reemerges next year when the one-time stuff goes off, when the stimulus money diminishes, even if the economy grows. We've got a lot to face up to as a state.
And we'll go to our callers, and let's begin, Marcos, with you. Thank you for joining us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I would like to say I think the Californians should have voted for a German-American governor, not an Austrian-American governor. No, anyway, I have a question. People always talk, okay, number one, I was always wondering about the real unemployment statistics. I mean, where people don't file for claims any longer. How many millions actually are not showing up in the statistics? And then some gentleman said something about solving the problem by getting more competitive. I just don't know how you're going to do this. I mean, you're competing with China. That's why everything's being made in China. Isn't that some kind of just to say something, you know, because I cannot see how you can compete with China and the Asian countries. So, I mean, the whole world free trade idea of where you have to compete with everyone, I just don't see it working.
Well, you're raising two significant questions, one about unemployment statistics, the other about the global economy, and I don't know who wants to jump in here.
I'd like to, Michael. On the unemployment, I think the caller's confusing filing for unemployment insurance claims and being called unemployed. The number of people on unemployment insurance is under half of the number of people who are officially unemployed. To be unemployed, you have to be out of work, looking for work, have made some effort in the last month to find work. And so what would be true about what the caller's comment on that is if people just gave up and quit looking. But as long as they're looking, they're counted. And the thing about China, you know, the point is, here's what I recommend that all your readers, all your listeners do, which is go on the web, look for Paul Krugman, and find the best essay he ever wrote, which is called Ricardo's Difficult Idea. And it lays out how we always will find something in which we have a comparative advantage. It might not be toys. It's probably not toys. But there'll be other things in which we have a comparative advantage. And fundamentally, as Krugman wrote in another great book, Pop Internationalism, countries aren't competitive. Businesses are competitive. But countries don't compete with each other. And we don't have to be competitive. In fact, there's really not much content to that term, except in a military situation. And so we will find the things that we have a comparative advantage in doing, and that's what markets lead us to.
I love the fact that a Hoover economist is recommending Krugman.
Krugman of the 90s is very different from Krugman of today.
Well, let me go back to you, Robin Farzad, and ask another question about unemployment, because I think it's important in terms of identifying numbers, and listeners may want to know about it. And that's this U6 measure of labor underutilization. It sounds jargonish, but it tracks part-time discouraged workers, and that number is also very high right now.
It certainly is, and you could count people in my class, I think journalists who are seeing their magazines close left
Absolutely.
And right, newspapers
yeah.
closing. We don't feel gainfully employed. Are we unemployed? No, but the almost the impending unemployed, in a Kafkaesque sense, we have our hands on our heads like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? I think that gets undercounted, certainly.
Well, if you're not actively searching for work, you're not counted in unemployment figures, and the U6 numbers for June were at 16.5%.
Right, and it's gone up 6 percentage points since a year ago. So that's
I'd like to see more granularity in the categorization. I mean, you say the chronic unemployed, the learned helpless unemployed, the despondent unemployed, and I think the number would be far larger. But on a headline basis, I think the double digit, the 10% number, just startles people. We're not used to anything like this. And if your prospects aren't that great, I mean, if you have to go out and perhaps take a job at Starbucks to just make healthcare ends meet or something else that's just a stopgap, I certainly anecdotally know so many people in my world that are in such a position and across all sorts of socioeconomic strata.
Well, if you're going to take a job at Starbucks, you're going to find fewer Starbucks available.
Right. That's a dwindling opportunity as well. But people taking part-time work, people doing stopgap measures, freelance work, everybody is in this state of limbo almost.
We go to Marcus. Marcos to Marcus. Hi, Marcus. You're on.
Hi, thank you. I have heard and read many, many places now that the economy is at least 40% just ordinary people going out and buying stuff. So the idea that the stimulus to ordinary people should take a backseat to trillions of dollars to fat cats seems ridiculous to me. And the second comment I have is most job growth is the result of small business expanding. I want to know what the preparations are to make those loans easier to small business. As far as I can see, the Small Business Administration hasn't ramped up much, and nothing's really going on with that. I mean, it seems to me we're not going to have much of a recovery if we don't have our small business loans in place when the time comes. And third, the stock market reaching 9,000. When we have a financial disaster, obviously, it just points out how irrelevant the stock market is in times like this, other than what some kind of vague hopefulness.
Well, there are two points there, but there's a question in the middle, and I'd like to hear what Stephen Levy has to say about just help to small businesses, Steve.
I don't want to get anybody mad, but the basic dilemma that we're in now is we have a shortage of customers, a shortage of demand, whether it's for iPhones or movies or the products of small businesses. We need small businesses are not in a position to expand right now. We're still laying off people. The loan question, while important, will be more important when we're having an expanding economy, which is what we need to do first. The caller was angry, I think, about fat cats, but most of the money that's put out by the stimulus package ends up in the hands of individuals to spend at stores and small businesses, the tax rebates, all of the safety net programs, the money that went to states that goes for education and health eventually ends up in the pockets of ordinary people to spend. The infrastructure money is wages and salaries for workers and materials. So the stimulus money per se, almost all eventually ends up in the hands of consumers. Let me end back on the previous question, because I think people are sitting out there saying, I don't see where the jobs are going. And Dave Henderson had it right. We're here in Silicon Valley. The iPhone, designed in Silicon Valley, made in China. We make too much of where stuff is physically made. Most of the high value in the new stuff going on is in the design and innovation of a battery, no matter where it's made.
Wasn't that the problem, Steve, in the car industry, that everything was being made in different places and that the profits were also in many instances going to those different places?
I'm not an expert. I mean, from my point of view, the problem in the automobile industry was massive global overcapacity that affected Toyota here and in Japan and affected GM, plus a mix of cars. I think the private market can sort it out, but I think really there was overcapacity. There won't be overcapacity if we invent a new battery here or a new medical records technology system or a new way to make energy transmission lines efficient. There's so much that has to be done here. The infrastructure spending, the implementation of medical records technology in hospitals here, that there's plenty of good targets out there for the private sector to work on to make this economy more efficient. I really do agree with Dave. We ought to get on our business designing stuff that Americans can make here. There'll always be a few things that were not competitive.
Well, let me go to an email that doesn't agree with David Henderson. I'd like to get the response, David, to Lewis, who writes, sorry to say that Henderson's comments just seem to justify the free market mantra of Milton Friedman and Hoover, a mantra now disowned even by Greenspan. If Henderson could address the fact that the lack of regulation of credit default swaps was a primary contributor to the financial crisis. I'd like to hear how he justifies those banking risks. In my opinion, Bernanke has it exactly right. Some banks are too big to fail and need to have their activities monitored. The era of blind free markets is over, as the era of blind environmental exploitation. A crowded planet needs regulation for the safety of us all.
Yeah, let me address the credit default swaps. What happened is in the late 90s during the Clinton administration, and this is what's talked about, and then I'll tell you what's not talked about. Lawrence Summers, who was Treasury Secretary, Alan Greenspan, Chairman of the Fed, a couple others, Bob Rubin, got together and said, hey, let's not regulate these credit default swaps. That's the story that's told, and it's true in a limited sense, but here's what's not told. The Brooksley Bourne, who was the chair of the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation, wanted to bring those in and have those allowed to be traded on that exchange so that the small people could play and not just the big boys. And essentially, Summers and Greenspan, et cetera, et al., said, you know, let's just keep it with the big boys. Les Antman, A-N-T-M-A-N, wrote an excellent article on this in a publication called The Freeman. He titled it Too Big to Succeed. The idea is that when you don't have markets giving you very quick, very precise data on probabilities of default, you have a problem. And so what they did was they kind of kept it with the big boys, and that didn't work out very well.
Let me go to a couple more emails here. And Robin Farsad, these are addressing some things that you said. Dave writes, I have to disagree with your guest who says there are no animal spirits flowing. I trade corporate bonds for a living, and the last several months have been very active. Demand for corporate debt has strengthened dramatically this year, and some of this was just a bounce from last year's extremely depressed levels. But this is the biggest credit rally I've seen in 18 years' experience. Demand for debt is just bond speak for willingness to lend. Is that not animal spirit?
Yeah, those are animal spirits from a portfolio perspective, and let me not diminish the importance of portfolio returns in this environment. I mean, I think the Federal Reserve itself said something to the tune of $14 trillion in household wealth, including stocks and home prices, have been snuffed out a matter of months. So to the extent that people see their 401k balance is finally going up, that they're daring to peak again, and, oh, my gosh, maybe I can log in, maybe I can look for my login, that is a positive thing, especially in that home prices are still, in most parts of the country, plunging. I do think, however, from a business spending perspective, when I said animal spirits, I mean thematically from a business. So suppose you've cut your payrolls to the bone and into the marrow. What's the pressing reason for you to go out there and bid for talent, to go out there and poach people that you've been eyeing for the past few years? I mean, you're looking for some sort of revenue opportunity so that these new sales can really sluice to the bottom line because you've cut all your costs. And I just don't see any evidence of that. Hopefully something will take hold, something what with all of this transportation and infrastructure and green spending. But I'm also worried, and maybe you know, Dave Henderson and I will finally agree on something in this conversation, that so much of the creative destruction has been thwarted. For example, by Detroit getting propped up, we may have prevented some of the more nimble Japanese players, many of whom have since relocated to the South and the Midwest, to fully go in there and capitalize on the green tech opportunity because the government is propping up a zombie in the meantime. Or some of the many hundreds of billions that have been committed to flagging Wall Street firms could have been better used if these firms were allowed to fail in some more orderly manner and other more nimble players were to take up the pieces and actually build something, create something, the way Google or Apple out of ashes of other boom-bust cycles created something that then sparked animal spirits. And I'm very worried in that what should be a stopgap in the government massively expanding spending is going to, over time, going to be looked at as really the only option, as the economy doesn't have pockets of kind of organic growth that can excite people on their own.
Well, I should mention that I'm getting a number of emails, as might be expected, about, Manhattan Project. You want that, then get off oil and convert to renewable energy. If you want sugar, then reduce and eliminate dependency on fossil fuels for energy and go to alternative forms of energy to provide new jobs and stimulate the economy. And that's, I suppose, certainly representative of what a lot of people out there are feeling. Let's find out what some more of our listeners are feeling. Lily, join us. Hi, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually only 17, so I may not be the most qualified person to comment on this since I couldn't even vote. But I did have one thing to say, and that was that I recently worked at a Hawaiian homeless shelter, and, you know, the stimulus package upped most of the residents in the housing department's supplemental security income by 13.6%. which is a really incredible amount in terms of helping them get around. So there's a voice that's not really being represented in, you know, critiquing the Obama administration right now.
Thank you for those remarks, Lily. Appreciate hearing from you. You want to comment, Stephen Levy?
I hope there's broad agreement that there is a federal role to bolster the safety net in times of recession. I thought that was kind of a bipartisan agreement, and a lot of the stimulus money went there. So I'm pleased with that, and, you know, I'll leave it to the other two, but I thought that was generally an American bipartisan agreement that the federal government steps up with expanded unemployment insurance and some money to help states and local governments maintain the safety net in times of recession.
Well, there is bipartisan agreement. It's just I don't happen to be part of it. I just believe in a very tiny role for the federal government. It should be there to defend us from foreign invaders and a couple
it's
other
David
things,
Henderson.
And that's about it. You know, so no, I don't agree. I do think, though, that the caller, she needs to be disabused of something, and that is she said she can't even vote, so maybe she doesn't know much. There are a lot of people who vote who don't know anything.
Yeah, a lot of people who don't vote who know a lot, we should mention,
right,
too.
Right.
Let me get to more of our callers, and we'll go to Tony. Tony, you're on. Good morning.
Hi. You know, my wife and I have been joking for a couple months now. We live in Southwest Riverside County, and we got hit really hard with the foreclosures. But for a couple months now, we've been walking around going, what recession? Everywhere we go, it's crazy busy. And we just got back from Las Vegas. We go there four times a year, and it's the busiest we've ever seen it. And so we don't get it, what the talk is all about. Everywhere we go, people are spending money.
Well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Maybe people are spending and not talking about it. But there does seem to be a lot of activity out there, Robin Farzad.
I'm not so sure. I mean, I you know, here I come from Miami, and you know, we had a very idiosyncratic condo boom. I mean, the likes of which haven't been seen in 40 or 50 years of history. Everybody just indulged in this binge that was fueled with cheap money and all sorts of mortgage arcana for the past 8 or 9 years. And if you fly down to South Florida, you can definitely feel it. There are empty boxes everywhere. There are a handful of vulture investors who are looking to get in. But business owners on the street will tell you that it's just miserable. People are, you know, postponing purchases. Dentists are telling me that they've never seen their rolls, you know, called of so many clients. People just not coming in. You actually have a dearth of a willingness to spend money. People are husbanding cash. People are saving. And, you know, and deleveraging if they're not in foreclosure or something else. And what's frustrating about this is what you should be doing after a period of kind of a drunken spending, a prolonged period of indebted spending. You should be saving that money. You should be paying down your debts. But the frustration is when everybody does it in tandem, everybody loses. And so there has to be a way to kind of break this vicious cycle. But you're hearing about, you know, from a city-to-city perspective, things are just, you know, underwhelming across the board. Come to Manhattan. Manhattan has been slammed by Wall Street's meltdown. You know, I can give you an example. AIG had to cancel a certain party that was going to be held at a venue in Lower Manhattan, which then subsequently had to shut down. It let go of a bunch of people. That party, they attempted to sell to other people for 20 cents on the dollar because now AIG was a ward of the state and the government was monitoring its every outlay. And, you know, this stuff just ripples across the board. The catering businesses that serve to it are suddenly not feeling their oats. You have real estate agents saying that I've never seen it this bad. Restaurants are closing left and right. This is going to take a long time to kind of course through the system.
Well, since you mentioned your hometown of Miami, I was just back in my hometown of Cleveland. And again, depending what sections of Cleveland you go through, you see some sections where there are lots of stores boarded up, restaurants closed down, and It looks pretty bad. Apropos of that, Mike, one of our listeners, writes, some of your panelists are ignoring double-digit real unemployment and long-term diminishing of middle-class buying power. Bernanke and Geithner have concentrated mainly on easing short-term credit, which flows to the banks for infusion of cash to large businesses. Isn't it true that this does nothing to change the continuing long decline in middle-class consumer buying power, which supposedly accounts for good economic times?
Well, can I answer that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, actually, here's where I didn't come ready to do this, but I might be bailing out Geithner a little here. The point is, the idea is not to get money to the middle class. The idea is to get the banks lending again. And it isn't the case that banks just lend to big businesses. They lend to lots of people. What I object to Geithner on and Bernanke is all this just incredibly direct intervention, trying to get one bank to buy another and doing all this muscling behind the scenes rather than just expanding the money supply and letting the money go where it will.
David Henderson, this is a much bigger topic, but a lot of criticism has come down on the Fed. And you said earlier that, you know, we'd be maybe better off without the Fed. Has come down largely because of almost a kind of fixed ideology on the part of Greenspan and Bernanke that you have to waver between recession and inflation and constantly move between those two forces.
No, that is what they believe. But I mean, I think a lot of economists believe that. I think the majority of economists believe that.
But the methods to do that, as you've suggested, have not necessarily been looked upon that favorably or with great countenance by those who, like you, who are critical of the Fed.
Right. That I think that essentially what you have with the Fed, and you know who actually had the best insight on this was John Stewart on The Daily Show when he interviewed Greenspan. He said, if you're such a free marketeer, why do you advocate central planning of the money supply?
I thought for a moment you were going to say John Stuart Mill's, but let me wrap things up here because we've come to the end. And just a quick comment from a listener. Let me get this straight. If only my grandmother had been allowed to trade in credit default swaps, the market would have valued them more accurately and none of this would have happened. We're getting those kind of comments as well. Just a little levity because you mentioned John Stewart. I want to thank our guest. Thanks, Steve Levy, Director of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy, economist who was with us this morning from Palo Alto, and David Henderson, Research Fellow with Hoover, and editor of the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics. He joined us this morning from Monterey. And Robin Farsad, senior writer, for Business Week magazine, who joined us from New York City. Thank you all for joining us. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. We're coming up on another hour. We're going to find out in the hour ahead all about the Coast Guard with one of our veteran environmental journalists and writers, David Helvark, who's written a book about the Coast Guard and their amazing history and what they do. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.